Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. So welcome everyone to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 117. I'm your host, Marcel. You can find me on Twitter as MarcelMTG. And I'm joined by my colleagues, my friends, my brethren that, you know, you really don't like those guys. But we'll start off, we'll go down the line. We got Ryan Bouchard.
I'm super flattered, Marcel. That's the nicest thing anybody said about me all week.
Oh, well, it's just going to go downhill from here, so, you know.
He's better... last alphabetically. Why does he get to go first?
Well, no, I'm not. You always go by last name.
Well, I'm before Bouchard alphabetically.
That doesn't make me last, though.
Oh, so this person here complaining and sighing and just has a problem with everybody else in the world that comes before him is Jason E. Ault.
That's
the
right.
The one, the only.
I'm Jason E. Ault on Twitter, because Marcel said who he was on Twitter, and then didn't mention Ryan. So the fact that Ryan got slighted is pretty cool.
Cripple Command. That's me.
Kind of like Cryptic Command, but crippled, because Ryan's the Phyrexian Cantwalker.
My legs are broken.
And then we got Corbin Hostler here, but he didn't bring his ice cream bowl or his B-dubs, so he's actually kind of naked on the cast today.
Yeah, I have no ice cream today, guys, or B-dubs. Oh. It's an off week.
Naked Corbin, that sounds awful.
Yeah, the doctor told him if he wants to keep his feet, he probably shouldn't do that every night.
So, Corbin, how interested would you be in an ice cream, B-Dubs flavored ice cream?
I can't imagine that being good,
Wait a minute, mango habanero?
I only eat one flavor of wings, and it's hot.
Yeah,
They have a mango habanero sauce, and I bet that would make a pretty good ice cream.
Bets that at Vegas number 2, we can get Corbin to eat ice cream. We can get Corbin drunk enough, excuse me, to eat ice cream with mango habanero sauce on it. Or at least hot sauce on it.
I think we could do that. I see that happening.
Over under on 10 p.m. Friday night.
We got 7 days in Vegas to make this happen. I think one
last time in Vegas, I got Corbin to eat the egg sac from a spider because I told him it was a tequila worm. I think we could get him to eat ice cream.
None of that, nothing that has been said so far is true.
Just you know the rapper.
Not a single thing said has been true so far.
Hey, that doesn't matter. You know, we live off of baseless facts and we have wild speculation. So, you know, it just hits the cast. It's all good. So I want to go first on record to say that we were wrong about Goblin Rabble Master. Oh man, were we so wrong? That card's what, now $20? Oh my goodness.
We thought it was gonna go to 10. Which was a good call. I mean, yeah, when it was 5, we were like, yeah, this can probably go to 10, and then it won't go any farther than that.
I don't know. During the set review, I was kind of like, I really like this card. It could be 2 or 3 bucks.
Yeah, during the set review, we were all completely off.
I didn't say it was going to be a bulk rare. I didn't say it was shitty. I said I liked the card.
I think the lesson to learn here is that literally nobody opens up the core set, because rares cannot, like, they just don't go to $20 in standard.
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on here, and maybe we should get into that a little bit. I think the first one is everyone is on Twitter right now complaining about Moto. And on Moto right now, Marcel, back me up. Can you flashback draft Tempest right now?
They got flashback Innistrad. They just had Tempest. So
okay.
They got triple
Innistrad. So flashback Innistrad, flashback Tempest. Nobody's drafting Corset on Moto. And since Moto is such a pain, nobody's really redeeming it. So you have fewer copies going into the market that way. Nobody wants to draft M15 in the shops right now. You know, with cons out, they're done drafting it. Not a lot of Corset got opened. Even though it's not a mythic, you know, you're seeing it's just another Thragtusk. You're seeing, you know, ubiquity in lots of different decks, a low supply. They would need to reprint Goblin Rabble Master a lot to get it down, you know, below 15. And, I don't think they're willing to do that. Yeah, for now,
sure. Yeah, I mean, red, traditionally does well the first couple weeks. And, you know, that people say that so much, it's almost a cliche, but it is true. You know, you go back to like Innistrad, for instance, you saw Stromkirk Noble spiked to $10+ on that first weekend, and it was bulk by the time it left standard. You know, you see this multiple times throughout the last several years. So $18 now, I mean, we've said it before. I will say it again. It won't go higher than 20. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But, I mean, it just, it takes a lot to be $20+ rare and standard no matter what set it's from.
I mean, the only thing, I don't want to say that, actually. I don't want to say it's not going to go above 20 because this card has the potential to, I mean, it's not Snapcaster Major, but it definitely has the potential to see Legacy and Modern play, and we'll probably see more Standard play than Snapcaster.
It's doing a thing that we want cards to do in Standard right now, and the fact that it's a Goblin, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, maybe you jam this in Modern Goblins, but that's like real fringe, so.
Modern Legacy, Goblins. God.
Legacy seems unlikely.
So, Rabblemaster actually goes into our Finance 101. Our Finance 101 is your emotional attachment to cards and specs. Now, how does Rabblemaster fit into there? Well, when Rabblemaster started to see traction and it became like a $3 card, a $4 card on Modo, I was like, this card can't be this expensive. Oh, I didn't think it was that great, or I know it's good, but, you know, I didn't call it, so I don't want to buy in at this price. And I was hesitant. I eventually think I bought in around like $4.50 or something. I was just like, this can't be that good. And ended up being the right decision. So, you know, it's now like $12 on there. But, you know, I had to get over my emotional not calling the card, or it not being the spec that I was on, and me not wanting to invest into the card. And I had to get over that hurdle. And I think this is something that a lot of people have as far as like the specs and stuff. So you guys want to talk about emotional attachments to cards in this Finance 101?
No, because there was never a card called Seance that I thought more people should play.
I mean, I've had emotional attachment to, and Knight of the Reliquary is probably my most emotionally attached card. I made a lot of money off that card, and it also helped me, seal a PTQ too. So, yeah. I guess that's me. Even more so than Seance, as crazy as that is, I do have one.
He's or probably Death held on to Knight of the Reliquary because it's tanked in price quite a few times, as many times as it's spiked.
Yeah, I do have quite a few knights. I also have far more of other things that I wish I didn't. Seances, such things, like you mentioned. Still, actually, I found a small box of Death Shadows the other day. Just a deck box full of them. But that's not bad.
So sometimes your emotions can make you think a card is going to be adopted more than it is or is worth keeping. Emotions can make you have a hard time selling when you should get out or getting in, you know, when you definitely should. So that's something to really think about. You got to kind of gut check yourself and say, am I doing this because I think it's right, or is this the way the meta is shifting, regardless of what my testing is showing? And, you know, it's really not about your style of play, what goes in the kind of decks you like to play, or what's been revealed in your testing. If you got to look at what the meta's doing, and even if Goblin Rabblemaster is really bad in your testing and you beat it 100% of the time, you know, if hundreds of people are going to want a four of, that's kind of how you got to structure your finances. So it's tough to separate your own bias from, you know, reality and what the meta is doing. And it's something that it takes practice, but it's something to be mindful of. And not everybody realizes that their own biases matter so much.
Well, I would say, this works the other way, as well. You know, we've talked so far about, I don't want to get into a card because I didn't like it. Well, a lot of people don't get out of a card soon enough because they like it. You know, I think one of the recent ones I've seen some people have trouble with was the Shadowborn Demon out of M13, or M14, I guess. That deck came along for a couple weeks, and the card went from like $3 to like $6, $7. And, you know, of course, if the deck was really good, it being a mythic from a core set, it would have been $15. People are like, yeah, you know, in my testing, this is really good, so I'm going to hold on to these. You know, I don't want to miss out. Well, then, you know, it kind of falls off. It has its moment, and then it loses it. And, you know, then it's just nothing. So I think you have to, you know, once you've made money on a spec, don't feel bad getting out of it. You know, I think the saying that I always throw around is leave the last 10% to the next guy. You know, if you were in on something like Goblin Rabblemaster and you got in at $3 and then the card goes to $10 and you sold out and now you're feeling bad because it's 18, I would say don't feel bad about that.
You don't. You tripled
made
up,
your money.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Tripling up is amazing.
So I think that's the other way you have to kind of look at that there.
I agree. One other thing too. Don't just sell your cards if your spec didn't work out. If it's going to be a bulk rare now, it's going to be a bulk rare later. That's the same amount of cash down the road. And if nothing else, wait until you're going to get a really good price on bulk rares. And, I mean, ship them that way. The store might not be super stoked to get, you know, X hundred copies of the same card. But you'd be amazed how often a card down the road, you know, it might not ever be the $10 you thought it was going to be. But it doesn't mean it's not $1.50 a piece. And, you know, if you bought them for 50 cents, there's no harm in leaving them in your closet.
New cards printed make new interactions, and old cards just, you know, could be a whole deck and just needed that one last card to grow the beard. That kind of thing happens all the time.
I mean, for instance, I have my 94 Splinter Fright still sitting on my desk. They were mostly bulk when I bought them. They are certainly bulk now, and I could sell them for bulk, but at the same time, it's not really costing me anything to keep them there. And who knows? Yeah. Maybe one day Splinter Fright will, you know,
be glittering wisps.
There's a small opportunity of cost associated with $9.40. Like, if you can't fully go in on a new spec because you're short $9.40, that's one thing. But, like, what's that $9 to you versus, like, Splinter Fright maybe being a dollar and that's $100 in the future? So that's something to think about. Once they're bulk, just sit on them as long as you can.
Yep.
If the opportunity cost is small, like under, you know, $25-$50.
It really makes me wish Shadow had just stayed bulk and hadn't hit the little price spike it did, because there was a point there where I could have sold out of those at like $3 a piece. I would have made over $10,000 on Death Shadow.
Oh, man. Wow. Well, there you go. That's Finance 101. Don't get emotionally attached to your cards. Shout out to Elliot Scott. He gave us a bunch of Finance 101 ideas, so we pulled one out of his list of ideas. And if anybody else out there got some Finance 101 ideas, please send them our way. Email at brainstormbrew@gmail.com and you'll get a shout out on the cast. And shit, while I'm at it, I'm going to give out another shout out. Give a shout out to Cole, Larry, and Evan. They had Beyond Wizards of the Cast. It was a podcast I did with them. We're actually all in the same room. There's four of us. So it was a unique experience, and I actually look forward to doing that in Vegas with you guys, because I think it adds a whole different element to it. So,
nerd.
Now, see, we tried to do this before, and, I mean, we couldn't even stay sober enough to get interviewed for some separate little pieces of video. How are we going to stay sober enough for 2 hours to podcast?
We'll figure it.
I think I'll probably manage.
Corbin, Ryan, and I actually were in the same room. There was some event in Indianapolis, and we kind of all hooked up with Marcel. So that's I think the closest we've gotten, all four of us podcasting in the same room.
But it's not about that. It's about Vegas, and I mean, I just don't want to make too many plans for Vegas. We did that last time, and we see how many of those panned out. I pretty much just stayed at the house the whole time and like sat around talking to people and hanging out and having a good time.
From what I'm hearing, though, people want to extend out Vegas to a week. So
yeah, there's a lot of assumptions going on with this. That's all I'm
saying. Don't care. People are like, what if they move the GP? And I'm like, spend the week of my birthday in Las Vegas and there's no GP for me to not go to?
I mean, everyone's speculating on it, and you know, you could probably save some money by doing stuff before it's announced. On the other hand, you could just end up going to Vegas when you'd really like to go somewhere else if whatever happens isn't there. So
what's better than Vegas?
I guess it's kind of a
cascade,
you know, low
GP
risk
in Salt Lake City. Like, who gives any fucks?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're just going to Vegas for a week, right, Marcel?
Yeah, we're going there, and if there happens to be
you're
a GP.
You're going to Vegas and hoping that there's magic.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I don't care,
honestly. Like, if it's anything like the last Vegas, I don't care. Like, I almost prefer that the site wasn't there.
Yep.
Then I don't have to worry about it.
Exactly.
We're just going to Vegas for a week.
This is the preliminary big SVU event. You know, we're going to get everyone.
2015.
Of 2015. We're going to get everyone there.
Boy, it's going to be awkward if there isn't a GP, though, and we're making
this
a big
event. No, there's really, it's really not. It's going to be fine.
Shout out to Maddie and Kevy. Oh, yeah. Heavy Meta. You guys are the boss. We're making this
Marcel, show. Man, you are devaluing these shout outs with everyone you throw out there.
Hey, I'm going to be throwing them out all cast on because I got a bunch of them. And I got some shout outs for my cube later on. Thank you, everybody.
Later. Come just do them now. Just get this shit out of your system.
No.
Nope. You got to space them out.
Otherwise, they get devalued.
Yeah, well, sure. People won't listen if you just go on for 5 minutes with shout-outs. But
he's going to go hoarse from all that shouting.
You have to trick people into listening to him every 10 minutes or so.
Exactly.
This is why we don't do shout-outs on this cast.
All right, let's read an email. How about that? Let's get some emails.
That's a shout-out, right? Shout-out to a reader.
Here's a good one. I got this. It's from Wei Zhu Ang, and I'm sure I pronounced none of those words properly, but that is his name. He says, hey, guys, I was in GP Chicago a couple months ago, and I got a Foil Thoughtsy signed by Marshall Sutcliffe. Shout-out to Marshall. Am I doing it right, Marcel?
I think
Sinking
so.
It in there.
I think so.
Shout-out to Marshall.
Shout-out to John Louts. He came back. Constructed Resources is awesome. Yay.
Hey, shout out to
Jerry T. Jerry T, he's going to be playing at
lucky we are not in the same room right now.
All right, let's just he's got his Foil Thoughtsy signed by Marshall because he's a big fan of Limited Resources because it's a great podcast. I edited that part. He says, although I would probably not be taking any financial advice from them. He says, I was just wondering what the price implications are for signed cards, artists versus magic celebrities, signed versus non-signed. Thanks, Wei. He says, P.S., loved your episode about foreign language booster boxes and tips about each store having foreign language allocations. I was able to ask about them at all the small comic book shops I knew that sold magic cards, and will hopefully be able to get a couple of foreign cons boxes on the cheap. Yeah, no problem. But so let's take his question. I mean, you guys get signed cards, whether they're signed by pros or by the artists or, you know, in this case, celebrities like Marshall. What do you guys think?
I hate to break it to you, but I don't think Marshall is going to be adding value to cards.
Oh, man.
If you're lucky, having a non-artist sign the card might not devalue it too much.
Yeah, there's some exceptions.
You got to get Kibler to sign your, you know, whatever it is Kibler signs. Yeah.
Well, like, my buddy had Liliana the Veil signed by Peyton Manning.
Oh.
I think.
that's real.
So that was actually had some value to it, I believe. Like, I don't remember, like, if he sold it to me or sold it to
That is certainly like, very unique. I'll give him that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are exceptions, but like, don't run out getting everything you can signed by random people, I guess.
I'll say this. It's very much a case of, finding that guy, right? Always. Yeah. You know? You run into another giant Limited Resources fan. He may think it's awesome. Marshall signed your card and he'll give you a premium on it. But for the most part, signatures on cards, you are lucky if they just don't devalue them, even when it's the artist's signature. A lot of people just don't want signed cards.
So I'm getting you guys to sign some cards. I sent, Jason a Chromanticore and you, Prime Speakers in Ghana. I gotta think of a card for Ryan.
Like, that's hard.
Well, it has to be one in the cube.
I was going
to
give him Shamble Shark, but then...
No, you got to put a freaking seance in the cube. There's so many comfortable play abilities.
Yes, there is so many. Oh, we're in. Oh, there we go.
I have a Japanese foil one. Will you put it in the cube?
No Japanese. I need to have English one. Because people got to be able to read the card and know what it does. There's going to be a number of people that don't.
People don't cubing know what seance does.
Cubing 101. They have to be able to read the cards to play with them, Ryan.
Yes, like I
filthy casual.
I like, there's a lot of beta cards, or not beta, but even beta and revised that I can't play because it says buried and, you know, discard a card, discard target enchantment. So like, that's already a curve.
Target enchantment in play must be discarded.
Yes, exactly. There you go.
Is how they use, like to use the word things.
So that's just a learning curve for people because like my brother, he plays magic. He's good at magic, but there's a lot of cards he hasn't seen over the years. So. Like him trying to play and then learn, say these cards and just like completely not knowing what certain things does. It creates a bad cube experience, I think. Then the same thing with foreigns and the same thing with textless cards. So.
I guess. That just sounds, I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
It's just not pimp enough for Ryan. But anyway, so, I mean, there you go. That's somebody might be really into your signed cards. If some people are all about artist signatures, a lot of people don't care at all and would rather the cards not be signed. You know, it's just a matter of who you are, who you're dealing with. All right. So, let's hit our next one here. We had a couple emails this week. Next one is from Shane in, Newark, New York. He says, hey guys, my question is about Palancron from Urza's Legacy. I have had a playset for several years now. I got them for $2 each for an old kitchen table deck, and I was recently surprised to see that the retail price on them was $12. but according to MTGO Goldfish, the price has been steadily going up for the past few years. What is your opinion, or rather, should I continue to hold them or offload them now? I feel that 10 to 12 is maybe as high as this card may go, for going any kind of game-breaking cards being printed. Thoughts? From Shane. Well, Shane, I will tell you that Palancron is, in fact, game-breaking by itself, and that's why it's $12. Yeah, Commander, EDH, card is,
Cube.
It's Cube. Cube.
Palancron really, is so good that Great Whale went up. That's how good Palancron is.
Palancron is, it's like the quintessential make infinite mana combo piece in Commander. So.
But it's not gonna spike, is it? It's gonna slowly trend up
slowly
over time.
It's gonna slowly go up. Correct. And then honestly, I don't know that it's something that would get reprinted. Because if you're not comboing with it, it's not really something you want. And it's not like Wizards is likely to put infinite combo decks into their pre-con Commander decks. So, I don't feel like the reprint risk is super high, but I also don't feel like, you know, the upside is super high. It's going to move very slowly. So, I mean, it's kind of up to you, honestly. If you have a use for them, they're pretty safe to retain their value. You know, on the other hand, if you want to do something else with that money, don't feel bad about getting rid of them, because they're not necessarily going to be worth a ton more in the short term.
And that's something to think about, too, having some of your money in cards that will retain, you know, value, and you might want to play with, that's non-trivial. That's something to think about.
Yeah. I mean, so basically you only need one Palancron, right?
Yeah.
Just need one to go infinite. Don't need a playset.
Nope. Don't need a playset for the cube. Speaking of cube, I'm going to give some shout outs.
Oh my God.
Shout out to Les and Proxy Guy. They have sent me some amazing stuff that, yes, everyone is being mad at me because I'm putting proxies with my cube, but I'm not going to buy a Mox. So sorry, guys. Finance world, I know you guys hate me.
Sure.
Man, let me give a shout out also. No.
No more shout outs. We're done. We're done with shout outs. Let's talk about standard.
No more shout outs ever.
You guys will never do another shout out on this cast ever again because of this episode.
Oh no, I will. Next week's my week. I'm just trying to think.
Oh my God.
Brian doesn't have any friends, so that's going to be awkward. Never been a guest on another podcast.
Shout out to whoever gives Jason 1,000 Russian followers.
Do it.
Oh.
Do it.
I'm not deleting him this time.
Jason loved his 1,000 Russian followers. If you guys are missing the story, I'll explain the end joke here. Somebody somewhere, some beautiful soul, decided to troll Jason's Twitter account by buying him 1,000 Russian followers from a buy your followers sort of site. And Jason had to go through and manually delete every single one of them.
Because Marcel's like, that looks bad, man.
Yeah, it does look bad.
Fake followers.
Yeah, it does look bad. You bought them yourself, probably. And then when you realized we noticed, you went and deleted them.
Exactly. There's a few people in the Magic community that has like a X amount of thousands of followers. You're like, yeah, they probably paid for those.
Like Ryan Bouchard. I don't know how he got so many followers.
Oh, jeez. Are you kidding me? Most of the, like, I gave you so many follow Fridays. I didn't want to hear it. I think I had to make up for like your first 200 followers.
All right. We've reached a new low here because Ryan is holding follow Fridays against Jason.
Yep,
so maybe we could talk about standard.
Let's brighten it up with the shout out.
Yeah, standard.
Shout out. Shout out time. Eric Rathberg, I want to thank you for sending me some cue cards. You were awesome for that.
Shout out to Ray for testing with me this past week and like ensuring that the Ascendancy deck that I want to play is actually a real thing.
Oh, shut up.
Shout out to Butcher of the Horde. Shout out to Butcher of the Horde coming into the second place deck. Oh, it's amazing.
Stop it.
Have you played against an Ascendancy deck? Like, this is not me saying it because I'm a combo player. Like, Ray is testing against this deck now because of how real it is.
No, I was talking about it last week.
The deck is really resilient.
Very resilient. It's surprisingly resilient.
And, like, there's so many ways to combo in the deck out of nowhere. Like, after playing a good dozen or two dozen games where I was seeing lines of play that, like, you can just win, like, turn three. It is possible.
Sam Stoddard was talking about the card being bannable in Modern, and I was like, this is either like the most hyperbolic thing I've ever read, or the card is realer than anybody's giving it credit for.
It's very.
I'm going to go with hyperbolic.
It does everything you want in any sort of deck that's relying on a mana creature for combo. Like, you are looting, and you are untapping your guy and making him bigger. Like, it gives you a win con right in itself. It finds you the rest of your pieces. So there's nothing that this card doesn't do in the right combo deck. Like, it's a one-card combo by itself.
Yes, it's a combo card. That's great. It's a combo card that combos with creatures that takes typically four colors to play because your mana creatures are green.
Corbin, like, this sounds an awful lot like an emotional attachment to your
Yeah, it really does. Like, I'm sorry.
No, what I'm telling you is that it's not bannable. It is extremely
bannable. No, I don't think it's bannable. Like, I'm not saying that.
Modern. Turn two kills in modern are bannable.
No, it's not. It's just not.
It's a turn two kill.
Which it one? Jeskai Ascendancy.
It's a turn two
How
kill.
How do you combo on turn
you
two?
You go turn one Noble Hierarch, turn two Jeskai Ascendancy, gun shot, me, or whatever you need to do to go off.
Yeah.
Like, it's not hard.
It's not hard, yeah. I mean, it's not easy, but you can do a turn two combo. I mean, it could be done, though. Like, it could be done off just a Noble Hierarch and just Jeskai Ascendancy and one Phyrexian spell in your hand.
Yeah.
Turn two, and you just go off.
Yeah, okay. Tell me how you win.
Again, we talked about this last week, how you do it. You build up your guy until you reach the critical mass, and then you get him.
Oh, you're right.
And in Modern, you get him with the Grave Shot. Grave Shot wins.
Okay. I mean, that's standard, actually. I'll give you that.
Standard, I cut the Burning Anger or whatever out of the deck completely. You actually don't need it. You just build up enough guys, and then you play one without Defender, and then you Twin Flame it. Like, I just ran an extra copy of Twin Flame because that gets you to the combo over the bulk or the, like, really clunky enchantment, and you just attack that way and kill your opponent.
Well, I'm all about combos, so I hope it happens. But let's talk about some of the other decks. Specifically, there were two SCG opens last weekend. One of them is the one that kind of got more coverage. Jeskai Tempo won. There were four green decks. There was like a red-white control deck, another Jeskai deck. Fairly, you know, good-looking metagame, honestly, for the first weekend. If you go and look at the top 32 list from the other one, 31 of those decks were green. Corsair of Krufix is real and seems to be the truth right now in Standard. Do you guys think that this is going to be the default going forward? Is this truly the most powerful deck? You know, 31 out of 32 is pretty crazy, you know, when you just look at it on its face. But where do we go from here?
There's a lot of mid-range, and green is the mid-range color.
Yeah.
You got Siege Rhino, Corsair, you got Sylvan Carry added, Pelucranos. A lot of the stuff that you're doing in mid-rangey decks is going to be in green, and this set has got a lot of slow stuff. It's got your Outlast, it's got your Morph, it's, you know, when the set slows down, you know, green is that mid-range color. It was a little bit more black in the last block, but now it seems to be like green is the color of mid-range, so.
Well, it's really, a lot of it is.
I think Corsair is real going forward.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of different flavors of green, honestly. You've got, you know, your typical, like, red-green monsters type deck, but there's all these devotion decks going around as well, and then there's, you know, even more kind of, you know, that control end of mid-range, but they still play it because of Corsair.
Yeah, that's well, sad. I mean, that and Carrier, Dad.
Right.
Like, that's like two of your biggest reasons, because you just blank a lot of aggro decks by getting to play those two cards, and then you get to go wherever you want from there. Like, exactly. I can't start deck lists right now that aren't like this Jeskai combo and stuff like that without those two cards. Like, having a physical difficulty on my own of coming up with decks that I don't, like, every time I'm just like, why aren't I just running this? Like,
well, it's a lot hard. It's really difficult to just, you know, you have the shutdown aggro plan of the two, you know, and that's great. But then you just have so much
Reach.
Absurd value just from you have so much consistency that Corsair adds in conjunction with Fetchlands. Look at the top part of your deck so much.
Oh,
you know?
So good.
Yeah,
it's just, so many incremental things you could do.
Yeah, it's just really hard to think that anything will be better. I think that the counter to that is like the hard control deck that doesn't care about getting on board. So
Mr. Vigaboo, he did a breakdown of the color percentages at the both opens, and it turns out green was 80%, red was 61%, white was 50%, black was 39%, and blue was 23%. Top 32 decks.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, Corsair, like you said, it's the truth. That card is real.
Yeah, it's not even just funny, though.
Everything. Luckily,
it's really funny that Mantis Rider is a card, probably the biggest spike of the weekend. And it was basically, there was one deck that did well. It was West Michigan's Jandine Klomperens at the SCG Open.
Also Kevin Jones, who played the deck and actually won the Open.
I did say Mantis Rider was a real card, right? You guys didn't like it?
I was a fan of it.
We didn't know if there was a home.
Exactly.
I was a fan of it for emotional reasons more than anything else. Like, I just loved the crap out of that card. I loved Lightning Angel, so I like it, but financially, I don't know that I said there was any movement.
All right, you guys ready for the green answer to Mantis Rider?
Slum it.
Cetesian Tactics.
Citizen Tactics. Ooh, I like it.
I'm going to say
That's already getting wrong.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
But
I don't think the upside's high because it's green, like $1.50, but the green doesn't, that's the answer.
I don't know, like, how does your control deck even beat these green decks though?
Well.
I mean, no, I'm serious. Like, there's so much value that you gain off of this. Like, how are you drawing more cards than what this deck is going through?
Well, they have Steam Augury, guys.
Yes, I like that card.
I mean, I like Steam Augury a lot.
That's the emotional attachment I got.
I love this entire format, actually. Like, everything that is being played right now is, like, Ryan's happy standard plays. Like, this is the perfect time for me to get back in. Like, there's not a single deck that I've tested where I'm like, oh, I couldn't play this.
I have been hearing Prognostic Sphinx actually might be a player, and I got an attachment to that card. I got 200.
Well, that's the only way to really go over to get more grindy and card selection-y than Courser is to just jam Sphinx in your deck alongside it.
I'm playing your game.
I'm still working the 5-color mid-range deck with Chromanticore, Siege Rhino, the Mantis. It's happening.
Okay, I'll say this, though. You know, we talk about this every year, that it's a lot easier to take a shell that did well at the Block Pro Tour, in this case all these green decks or the red decks, you know, from last standard season, and play them on the first weekend than it is to come up with anything truly new.
Yeah.
The first weekend last year, there was no Mono Blue Devotion, there was no Mono Black Devotion, so it was Green-White Aggro won, you know, the same deck that won the Block Pro Tour a year ago. It's the same this weekend. The Pro Tour is next week. And that's when I think we will really see things shake up, and we'll see people. The question is, do the pros show up with decks that can beat Courser, or do they just build the best Courser deck there is? Honestly, I kind of think it may be the latter, where Courser's just too good to not play when you just basically can work that into anything. Like Ryan said, any deck you build can start with those cards, and you'll be fine. So, but I mean, that's the real question. Is there something new coming out of the Pro Tour, or is it just going to be more flavors of green?
But I'm also, like, kind of hesitant. Like, I understand what you're saying about decks that do well in the Block, and the Block Pro Tour are going to translate into Standard, but that doesn't always happen. Like,
not always, but it traditionally does.
Not traditionally. Some of them did, but I mean, not really. It's not most of them.
It happens most years.
I mean, look at, like, you got Lingering Souls, which was bannable in the Innistrad Block, and like it was playable in Standard, but her Intangible Virtue wasn't banned at all. So there's, like, you know, there's things that can happen in Block just because of the limited card pool that can take off.
Yeah, absolutely. But the same decks that did well in Innistrad continue to do well after that.
Do you guys want to have some entertaining, like, I'm on TCG Player, I was looking at Courser or Purefix. If anyone wants some entertaining reads, go to the comment section.
No.
You have people like, I'm reading the most recent stuff. So you have people just like, this card is terrible, this card is good. You've got someone started the usual, it dies to too much removal in Standard argument. We've got this guy saying it'll be back to 15 once this guy's stock dries up. And then there's this guy in all caps talking about how, something that it won't dry up. There's no way that they'll sell 200 copies of this card, and then like a day later they're down to like 90 some copies. it's value all the way down. Oh, we're getting into the legacy argument now. There's a guy here talking about how stores just go to buy out all of the cards, and that's the only reason cards like this would spike, and legacy is going the same way, and yeah, talking about certain stories.
This sounds like Reddit bullshit.
Oh, it's fantastic. This is awesome.
Well, I mean, it's like, this is another one of those cards where it's like, on the one hand, I feel good that we predicted this on the set review to go up. I think we had Ruben on that week or the week after, and we all liked this, and we all thought, hey, maybe this will be $7. And it went to 20 and is now 15.
Ruben thought it was going to be a $15 card, and it's like closer to 10. Yeah. I mean, on the set review, you guys were kind of, I picked it as one.
I mean, I remember liking it, but I was like, to me, it was like, there's just a lot of value in this card, so like maybe post rotation it becomes a thing and it rises from a couple dollars to like $5-$6.
Yeah, Jason said it was a bad half of
I said it was a bad half of Oracle and Maldiana. I didn't really, like, you guys are like, it's a 2/4, it's toughness matters. I was like, I don't think it's 4 toughness matters. It's 4 toughness matters.
Yeah. So I'm going to give a shout out here to this John Pastrami guy. A, because your last name's awesome. And B, because he was the first person on TCG Player to call this. He was like, this just looks like a $10 plus card. I start picking these up and he gets some flack later on down there. So
welcome to an hour of Ryan Reed's the comment section.
Now I just want to see who the first person to be like, this card's going to be worth money was. And like the guy should get some kudos because I mean, oh, but he does lose some points for like logging into this thing on Hotmail.
At least it's not AOL shit. Fuck.
All right, so let's talk about the you know, the non-green. Hold on. Non-jet.
Got a shout out.
Oh my god.
Give a shout out to TSG cuz he gave me some cube cards and Usman the Rad cuz he got some cool cube podcasts. Go ahead, Corbin.
Back to the thank you. I appreciate it. Talking about the non-green non-Jeskai decks, there's very little to talk about. But there's some Mardu flavored stuff. There's some
But no ascendancy in the Mardu, so that was kind of like a.
There's, you know, one red white control deck, which is interesting. Another thing, looking at Star City's website, they're all about the Jeskai and the Sultai and the Mardu, but then they say green red monsters and red white control. It's like they're halfway in on the names here.
I'm sorry. Do not call Shardless Bug any other name. I'm not okay with that. You can do it to Standard. I don't care. Don't do it to my Legacy decks.
Well, that's why I noticed it in Legacy, because they have like Sultai whatever, and then they have Blue-Red. They have like Sultai Delver, and then they have Blue-Red Delver. You're just halfway in and halfway out right now.
Ticked me off, because like I'm trying to like actually test and read about like how to play Shardless, because I want to get into that deck, and I was listening to coverage, but I wasn't watching. And because they said it that way, I didn't realize what in the world they were talking about. And like, I just didn't hear Bug, so I didn't think about it. And then I realized halfway through the match what in the world they were talking about.
All right. So, the red white control deck, I think, is interesting. We see the, Chained to the Rocks come out, and as well as some Fated Conflagration. But I do think that there's some things to see from these lists. Mainly Anger the Gods being a 4 of in the main deck, I think, is something that will stay strong. It doesn't kill Courser, but it kills basically everything else. The Chain to the Rocks is something that does kill Courser, in decks that can run enough mountains to support it. The Mardu decks, also very interesting.
Crackling Doom. Oh man. That's a card I had emotional attachment to, not want to admit that card is good, but that card is the truth.
Yeah, it's real. Real good.
I was watching some
Soren
testing on.
Did not have a great showing this weekend.
Actually, he did.
It showed up, but it did not. It didn't show up in the same number Sarkhan did, for instance, or Zenigos or anything. It did okay.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said Sarkhan. Yeah.
Sarkhan had a great showing. Soren had a fairly mediocre showing out of the gate.
Yeah. Yeah. I could imagine that.
It underperformed, like relative to all the hype I saw on Twitter.
It certainly saw less play than $25 Planeswalkers should see.
I still think it's a good card, and I wouldn't say he's a $25 card.
I especially think it falls off once people kind of get off of the red decks. Like once people figure out how to, the red decks kind of fall out of flavor, like they typically do after the first month or so. Then like that life gain ability of his becomes far less relevant, and he probably sees even less play. But I'll tell you one guy card I like that I thought would be pretty good, that I did not see much, and that is a Dune Blast. I think we probably mentioned this last week, but we were talking about them in deck splashing it, whatever. But in this case, there were just these Abzan midrange decks, you know, your green, white, black decks playing them, and they'd get on all these board stalls. And it's just like every time I look at the game, they're sitting at 7-8 mana, and a Dune Blast would just absolutely end the game.
Do you six mana Dirtily Wrath?
It's seven.
Okay, you want a 7 mana Dirtily Wrath.
When the card reads, destroy everything but your Siege Rhino.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, like, those decks hit 7 mana, and they typically have several cards in hand, and then there's just this giant board stall on both sides. Like, it certainly is something that is a sideboard possibility, or you know, it's pretty bad against the aggro decks, but I think it's 2 of in the sideboard or something. Seems pretty reasonable because it just breaks open those mid-range stalls that we saw quite a bit last weekend.
And what happens when you got a Siege Rhino and a Soren?
Then it can finally trade with a Blue Kronos. Which is doubled and tripled in price almost over the past.
I don't know if this is an emotional attachment, but Soren's bad.
Pelucanos is good, though. He was in 50% of all decks in the main top 32.
He solves problems.
He is the biggest guy on the ground, and I'm glad I picked up my copies when I realized that.
I think it's interesting how little surprise there's been, but how much growth there's been. For instance, like, everyone knew that Courser and Caryatid and Glucranos would be good, but they've still gone way up in price. I think it kind of goes to show how tired people really were of last season's standard and how more they're interested in getting into it right now.
And another thing I want to hark on is the Rattleclaw Mystic.
Uh-huh.
Like, the problem I've seen in people talking about with Caryatid is it's just so defensive and non-aggressive of a card. That when you pairing that with Courser, you're just already on a backpedaler's turn in terms of being an aggressive deck. And I think the Rattleclaw Mystic solves that mono problems while being an aggressive card. So you will see those, teamer decks, and Rattleclaw Mystic will be used in that, and it provides a different outlet. So I think it's just, there's a balance there, and a Mystic does fill that role that people say it's all Caryatid first, and then it goes to the Courser, where I think that you really got to look at what you're trying to do with your deck. Before you just say, oh, it's not instant, Caryatid Courser is the base for all green decks.
Sure. I mean, so is there anything else about standard you guys see coming? Anything that you think didn't get enough hype or something that you want to bring attention to?
I was surprised that people were so eager. Like, if you look at how much Mantis Rider spiked relative to how much it was played, I think people really want that control. It's almost like a fairies deck. That blue-red deck, and I think there's a certain subset of the population that really wants to play a deck like that. They were really eager to see it, and I think other than Mantis Rider and Goblin Rabble Master, which have already, you know, super spiked, I think there's some money to be made on some of the cards in that deck that, you know, no one has copies of. So I think if you take a look at, you know, those deck lists, I think my pick of the week is going to be something out of there, because I think there's real opportunity.
Let's just move into pick of the week then. Why don't you go ahead and kick us off?
It's time for the pick of the week.
You know what? Here's a card that I never really evaluated. When we did the set review, I was like, I don't think anything we say about this card matters because it doesn't have a deck. This is something that our writer, Sander Vanderzee, has been very, very bullish on, and everyone was kind of like, yeah, all right. And he feels a little bit vindicated. That card, Steam Augury. Steam Augury is on sale for 25 cents right now on Star City. Channel Fireball, Jacob Van Loonen, I think, wrote about the card in the context of the Mantis Rider deck, I'm calling it. You know, with the, it's got the Jeskai guy with prowess and lifelink. It's got the Mantis Rider and the Rabble Master, and then the rest is, you know, spells. It's kind of a Delver or Fairy style deck, but, I really like Steam Augury, and that's gonna be my pick of the week, but I also kind of like that dig through depths or whatever. Dig through time. I think even at $2-3, that has potential upside because I think, there's people that are going to want to play control. I think Dig Through Time, you know, gets played in, potentially in Legacy. So I kind of like that too, but my pick of the week, I'm going to say is Steam Augury.
I like Steam Augury. I liked it way too early though. So I got several copies I'm sitting on from last year.
It looks a lot more appealing when there's no Sphinx's Revelation.
Well, that's what I said.
It didn't have a deck.
It can't do anything, and there's no control deck that wants it that would not play Sphinxes over it by a long shot. And the thing is that also it doesn't, you don't want it in a control deck because it doesn't give you card selection. Because people won't give you the cards that you need, so you're not going to dig for the answers. But if you got like a deck that has flat answers or not really looking for answers, just looking for cards, this helps you get cards. So that's where in a tempo deck, I think that's where it will shine. Or has a good chance for it to shine, and not necessarily in a straight control deck.
Well, I have one I think is pretty good. Green. I mean, as we know, it's obviously dominating right now. But how about Hornet Queen?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hornet like Queen $3 right
no,
now.
No, it's $1.50.
It is. What? It's two. Oh man, it jumped up. It was like 17 cents not too long ago on Moto.
There are copies available $2. At $1 on TCG Player. The mid price is $1.50. The Commander version, which by the way is the original Commander, and that is fairly rare, is $3.50. But this card saw play in 22% of main decks, also known as more than Siege Rhino and Brimaz and other expensive stuff. Like, and I also, you know, was thinking about Nylia, because it's $7, and it was in a lot of decks, although, and I think that's still good, and it's a mythic, which is good, but it's from Theros, which is, you know, obviously opened a lot more than a 15. But yeah, Hornet Queen at $1.50. There's a lot to like there after we see, Goblin Rabble Master sitting at $19.
Yeah, like Hornet Queen is now, it has climbed steadily on Moto. It's now $2. I think there's maybe less. It might be $4, but people have been talking about this. I've seen this as a four of in this green, black, graveyard and, Whip of Erebos deck that just seemed fucking impossible to beat. But,
that's a deck I've been all about for a while. Getting your Hornet Queens out of your graveyard.
Well, I guess nobody knows yet. I haven't put my new article out. But my new article series, sneak peek, I'm going to be talking about Standard, and I'm getting more into playing on Moto and stuff. And one thing I really noticed, and I'm trying to kind of draw some correlations between prices, is the price of Moto for Genesis Hydra is the same price it is in real life. And for a rare on Moto to be similar price to real life is quite crazy at that low amount, because normally if something is $3 in real life, it's going to be 50 cents or a quarter on Moto. And so I really think that that card is poised for a strike or for a spike due to the fact that, you know, we're seeing all of these decks that really can gain all this value off Courser and stuff like that. But you have to have some sort of end game to beat the other green decks that are doing the same thing. So you really need the card advantage. And I think this is probably the closest thing you're going to get to providing that.
Yeah, I really like that. And the buy-in is basically double that of Hornet Queen, and they're played at the same rate. However, there are almost twice as many copies of Genesis Hydra than Hornet Queen. So I think that's a really good pick.
A lot of people playing with Genesis Hydra are very impressed by what it does, and it just gives you a good long game. So this is a card that I was emotionally disattached from, and that now I'm coming across to, and I probably will consider a major player in the new Standard.
It triggers just like Cascade, by the way. If they counter the Genesis Hydra, you get your other card.
Oh, I did not know that.
This has everything going for it. That Ravel Master has going for it. The fact that, you know, no one's really doing Moto Redemption, no one's drafting Corset, no one's busting Corset. I think anything with upside out of the Corset is got a lot going for it. So Hornet Queen and Genesis Hydra, that's good stuff.
And it's the second most expensive rare in M15 Moto, so that gives you an idea there that there's definitely some traction on the card. Well, another card from M15 that I like, that's pretty cheap on Moto, less so in paper. It's $4 in paper, but it's 60 cents in Moto, is Scuttling Doom Engine. I hear that this was actually pretty popular in Japan, and they're trying to play this card a lot. So I think there's opportunity definitely on Moto to get some copies of this while the opportunity is there. But my pick that I really wanted to go on was Obsidet. Obsidet's under $1 on Moto. It's $3 in paper. I just see this card it's not necessarily going to be a player. It's not going to be a player in Modern. I don't see that happening. And if it does, it's going to be a one of or two of it that. But I think over long term, it's a very powerful card. You'll see this in people want to play this in a Commander or casual formats. And over time, getting in on it at $1, $3 on paper, I think is a good opportunity for a bulk mythic. And this would be a nice long term hold to get into.
So while we're on the subject, we've been talking about the core set. What do you guys think of Stoke the Flames at $4?
I mean, it's a card.
It's an uncommon $4 card. It's been a long time since we've seen that.
Where is it? $4 Moto?
TCG Player.
What about, yeah, like Jesus. Dismember? What was Dismember the entire time? This is not as
Dismember was like $5 for like a minute.
This is a card that we should have seen
was
coming.
Three.
Like I knew this was insane on Moto, but I didn't think it was getting insane in paper. This is
$4.
We should have seen
paper.
This coming when it was $4 on Moto and like 25 cents in paper.
I won't lie, this one completely escaped my attention. I know people don't like Corset, and I have been a big fan of the uncommon spec in the past. But it's just been a long time since we've seen a $4 uncommon for any length of time. I mean, I was all about Lingering Souls, and that card never went anywhere, and then they reprinted it
into Oblivion. I mean, that's not really true, actually. There was a couple last year.
Oros Charm was $2.
Experiment 1 was almost
$2.
It was more than that.
Oros Charm was 4 or 5 for...
They were, like, there was... We see it almost every year. Yeah, I just don't think the cards.
TCG player high on Experiment 1 was 2 of 10. So, I mean... And the high on Boros Charm was, Charm was $3.
The buy price must have just closed in really close, because like I was selling those at one point for almost two a piece.
Yeah, and the high on Boros Charm is $3. It's just, I mean, I guess it's just that M15, man, nobody touched it at all.
Which is crazy. I don't understand that at all, but like this set's so awesome. I was drafting it tonight.
I just want to buy more copies of it, more boxes of M15. This stock of, I mean, there's just a lot of good stuff in there, and there's all the long-term stuff we talked about in the first place. I mean, the EV on a box of M15 right now is almost $130 on TCG mid-price, and that's not something you see a lot with imprint sets. True. So.
There you go, another pick of the week.
Yeah.
Well, I got another shout-out. Bam!
You're out of control. This is an intervention, Marcel.
I got the control. I'm the editor. Until you guys get a new person to edit the podcast, you can't stop me. Shout out to Brandon Long. You know why you're getting the shout out. Jen Lindberg, Walt N, and Dylan Goins for again helping me out, sending me some cards for the cube, and Zach Sells Magic. You guys are all awesome. You guys are contributing to the cube. The dominance of cube take over all magic.
Man, like a month ago, Marcel just didn't even care about cube.
Hey, when you catch the bug, it's like, you know, it's hard.
I can't even say anything because I write EDH articles now.
Man. All right. Well, we've got hopefully no more shout outs. We've got a pro tour.
Hold up. Wait, shout out to the pro tour and Ray. Future Ray Pro. You better crush this. And
sorry, Ray Pro, huh?
I mean, current Ray Pro.
I'm sorry. Let me correct that, Kurt Ray, bro.
And Sander, sorry, Sander, he couldn't make it out to Hawaii this year, or this time around. I guess the costs were a little high for him being the student, but he's going to try to make it to the next PT. So shout out to Sander Vanderzee. But you already got him, right, Jason, earlier?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, I talked about his love of steamoggery. I don't know that he's going to Hawaii, but he is going to a future PT event.
Did I kill all the fun?
No. We're just like approaching the end.
Oh,
we're
are
just so sick of your shout-outs.
Those shout-outs killed the fun an hour ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jesus.
I don't know. I enjoyed them.
You're a tyrant.
You guys got some shout-outs for anybody you guys care about in this community?
You put me on the spot. Next week's my shout-out week. I got this.
If you want a shout-out, invite me to be a guest on your podcast.
That sounds like a threat.
Yeah,
it was intended as a threat.
Heavy Meta is like, yeah, we are not taking Jason on as another host. You're already part of three podcasts. Shout out to Money Draft.
What's the third?
You know, that one.
The one that you did before that you had to give up.
You know.
MTG After Hours.
Oh. What? Can't forget After Hours.
Shout out to After Hours, Marcel.
Shout out. We're going to bring that back.
Did you just shout out our own cast?
Well, that's what Marcel's shouting out Jason's own cast. Like, it seems like a circle jerk. You may as well get in on it.
We're done here. We're shouting ourselves out at this point.
We have jumped the shark as a podcast.
Yeah.
Shout out to Shambosark. Shambosark is bad.
Oh, no. Don't, no.
One day After Hours will come back. I'm sure we have some good After Hours in the can for Marcel to dig out.
Yeah, we got some good ones. Tap and Sack actually sent us an After Hours episode, so we're going to put that up. That'll probably be the inaugural to break the ice again.
Wait, I do have a shout out, but you're going to have to clip like 2 minutes while I go and figure out who this person is.
Okay.
Don't cut this out. If you're doing it, leave it in. Make people see how dumb Ryan is for doing this.
No, I just have to look up this guy's name because he tried to send me,
it sounds really important to you.
It is. No, be nice. Like, I'm really mad I didn't get this. And that's why I'm giving him a shout out. Well, I mean, I would give him a shout out if I did get it too, but, he was sending me an artist proof Shamble Shark.
Oh, awesome.
And it never got here.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so like the guy tried really hard, and I'm actually like really sad that I don't have this thing in my possession. Now Twitter is fucking with me because
hey,
I don't.
In the meantime, let me shout out the toilet bowl at GP Portland because that beat does.
No, don't put that in the middle. No, that's like.
I'm done.
Oh,
I'm done.
I'm so mad. Why isn't this here?
It's not.
I'm with you people.
It's over. The end of the podcast.
Like,
now the brain farts continue.
Yeah. I hate Twitter. Why do so many people message me on here? Now I can't find anything. It's just one giant stream of things. This was posted like 4 days ago, I think.
Imagine if it was WordPress.
Ah, no. Kyle F. Brother, Brotha.
Oh, we all know Kyle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that doesn't mean everybody at home knows. Thank you, Corbin.
Oh, shout out to MTG Brainstorm, our brother from the Smooth Brothers. Yeah. Check out that podcast.
I'd like to shout out Buffalo Wild Wings and Bud Light Lime.
Oh, wait. What about the 18? Scotty Mack, Jay Boosh, KYT, Jeremy Schofield. Shout out to those guys.
Shout out to Taylor Swift.
Oh, Taylor Swift. Shout out to Taylor Swift.
Oh, you gotta get the Taylor Swift.
What about Jennifer Lawrence? So shout out to the.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was.
I don't want to hear about any shout outs. No, we're not going there. We're cutting you off, Marcel.
Oh man.
Had enough of the brew this week.
I just muted my mic. Are we done yet?
Wow, Jason's the one not participating in this.
I'd like to shout out Jason. I'd like to shout out Jason for not participating in shout outs. I really respect that.
Yeah, I do too.
He's taking a firm stance, and I'm glad that he has values and morals and scruples that we don't have. Just tune in next week so you get more of the Shout Out Less podcast.
Well, that's what you think.
This is Brainstorm Brewery. Adios, muchachos. Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.